Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I am a medical director at Chicago Department of Public Health. My primary role is in chronic disease prevention and health promotion.
What kind of questions? What sort of reservations have people had about the vaccine?
When, where, how are people going to get vaccinated? There's a lot of questions about getting vaccines out. And then from communities, we get a lot of questions about, is the vaccine right for me? Is it safe for me? I've done sort of off-the-cuff conversations about what's in it. What is it composed of? What are the side effects? Will I be sick afterwards? There's a lot of myths out there. There are myths about the vaccine containing DNA. There are myths about the vaccine containing virus. There are myths, obviously, some even more far-fetched ones. I will just be honest. I don't think any kind of question from someone who's interested in getting vaccinated, I don't think any question is an inappropriate question to ask. I think people should ask the questions they have, and I try my best to answer them.
Is it more challenging to, I'll use the word persuade, people in the black and brown communities to get vaccinated?
This is interesting. I've done some community outreach with people in the black community, and my perception is that people have questions, and they need to have them answered in a way that is relatable, that they can understand it, and they need those questions to be taken seriously. I like to say that everyone had questions. The FDA has questions. That's why we go through a review process. Doctors had questions. I had questions when it came out. I wanted to know if the efficacy was going to be very good. I think everyone has questions, and they're entitled to have those answered. So I would say that people ask their questions, and if we answer them, then they feel more comfortable. But I also think that the way we answer them has to be relatable. If we use a lot of scientific jargon, I think that can put people off, and it makes it very difficult to understand. And I get that completely. So for that reason, I think there is a lot of vaccine hesitancy amongst people who aren't getting their questions answered. Because if you use a lot of scientific jargon, it can make people feel like that information is not available to them.
Not available to them. And maybe if there's a baseline of distrust from government or institutions or medicine, then maybe people just say, forget it, I'll pass, which may be more problematic in the black community, right?
That is what I've heard. I myself am not a member of the black community personally. I've heard it, though, on our community calls, and I've heard it from my patients in the past, that they are concerned about trusting the government and trusting this kind of science. There's been a lot of injustice against the black community over the years, over the decades, and there are specific instances where the black community in America has been taken advantage of for the sake of science. And so I understand completely, in a community level, like why that might happen. But individually, I've had great conversations with families about what is in the vaccine. And like I said, I don't think that people are close to having their questions answered. I think that they need them answered, but respecting that history as well.
Yeah.
And respecting why people have those questions, I think is really important.
And the vaccine that a person of color gets is the same vaccine that a white person gets, is the same vaccine that an Asian person gets. We're all getting one of two or three vaccines. It's the vaccines aren't being segregated, right?
That's correct. They're all the same vaccines. You're right. Right now we have two, and we're set to be getting a third type of vaccine soon. It's the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and that will help create more vaccines in the pipeline and thus, you know, more doses available. But it's the same vaccine for everyone here in the United States. Around the world, there are some other vaccines. And that's because different countries had different manufacturers who were able to produce it for them. But here we've got these two and now coming up three. And the one that you get is basically going to be a product of what was delivered to your community and what's available at the site that you go to.
Yeah.
So here in Chicago, we have both kinds of vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna. And it's just a question of which one's available where you go.
I was talking to a heart doctor from Northwestern a couple days ago, and I said, which one should I get? And he said, you should get the vaccine that you can get most quickly. Don't shop around. Trust the science and trust that all of them are sufficiently efficacious that you're going to be better off just getting the vaccine that is available to you today. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right now, the two vaccines that are out there are essentially comparable in terms of their efficacy, and there's no reason to think that one is better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has a slightly lower efficacy. You will see that online. However, remember that it is a higher efficacy than a lot of the vaccines that we get for other diseases, including a lot of the annual flu shots. The ones, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines were actually so good that this one seems to be lower by comparison, but it's actually still really good. And it's a little bit easier to deliver because it's only one dose. And that's going to help us get to more people, which overall, right, the goal of this is to reduce the amount of disease in the community. It's to reduce the spread of the bug. It's to reduce the pandemic. And so if we can get more people vaccinated with a one-dose regimen more quickly, mm-hmm. then it helps bring the pandemic down faster.
Yeah, we're all part of a global solution here. It's actually, from a community standpoint, not that critical that I'm 70% vaccinated or the vaccine I have is 70% effective and yours is 90% effective. Together, we have made the community very much more safe, and that's the idea, right?
That's exactly it. If, you know, in your community, people have 70% protection, mostly through a Johnson vaccine, but there's very little COVID-19 left in the community, then you're protected. That's the purpose of trying to get out vaccines in any way we can, whatever dose is available to you, the Pfizer, the Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, whatever's available to you, you go ahead and get that out.
Dr. Patel, I can understand how people get intimidated by the jargon. Who amongst us knew a thing about viruses last March? And now we've all tried to ramp up our knowledge base, but we don't know what we're talking about. This is really perplexing stuff to us. I could understand anybody listening being a little intimidated by the language and therefore a little suspicious. In its most simple terms, what do you tell people who have reservations? How do you talk to them? How should I talk to people about what we're doing and how safe it is?
So if I can explain it like this, so one of the reservations I heard, like I said, is people have a lot of questions about what's in it and the science behind it. It's very difficult to understand just reading the science. And I will be honest with you, I think a lot of healthcare providers, you know, don't understand it. It's hard. I myself am no immunologist. I don't fully understand the real technical details. But here's what I say to people to help them understand how it works. And that is that the mRNA that's in this is a new technology. So you haven't seen it before. That's why it feels so unfamiliar. That's number one. Number two, there are myths out there about what's in it. Like, is there DNA? Will it get in my cells? Actually, the way it works, it's kind of like a secret message encoder. So DNA is the secret message in all of our cells. It's how we are who we are, but it has to be uncoded in order to make the proteins and the molecules in our body. And the process that it goes through to get uncoded, it uses something called mRNA. M is the messenger. It's the thing that tells the rest of your body what to do, what proteins to make. So it takes the code in the DNA and then talks to the other parts of your cell so that you get proteins. And we've hacked into that system. So you don't have any mRNA in you. If you've never been exposed to COVID, you don't have any mRNA telling you to make immunity against mRNA. So instead, the vaccine gives you that. So it just gives you like the key to the lock. It gives you the message to, hey, go get some immunity to COVID. Go build that immunity to COVID, even though you don't have to see the virus in order for that to happen. So it's kind of hacking into that system. So that's one thing that I tell people. The other thing I tell people, sorry, Joe, the other thing I tell people is that nobody likes shots. You know, it's very natural not to like shots. So I understand completely that you may not want to get it, but it's okay to feel that way. And just to know that you will recover from that, the kind of the feeling you get after the shot, you'll feel fine. And that that kind of acknowledgement that, yeah, you might feel a little sluggish afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Just acknowledging that and acknowledging that no one likes shots, I think that helps.
Well, people have reservations, I think, too, based on their personal situation. I'm a female and I'm pregnant, or I'm a female and I may want to get pregnant soon, or I have a heart condition. And I think just another differentiating factor might be for some people in our audience that they are Hispanic or they are African American, and they wonder if, therefore, biologically, they're somehow different, that in their community, there might be a different reaction based on their race to the vaccine. Is there any possibility of that? And is there any history of that, of certain vaccines affecting certain nationalities or races different than others?
That's a great question. I don't think there's any history of that in other vaccines that I know of, but I'm not a vaccine expert in all vaccines. That being said, mechanistically, the way all human bodies work is very it's the same at that micro level. We all have cells with DNA. We all have to make proteins. That's part of all of us, from babies to seniors. All of us have to do the same thing. And we all have to create immunity through the same pathway. There's no difference depending on your race or underlying condition to that process. So all of us are going to use the vaccine the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, to your question of, you know, what happens if I'm pregnant? What happens if I have an underlying condition? I really use that analogy of key to a lock because that's really what it is. mRNA that's going to give you the message to make immunity to COVID, if that's the only message it carries. It carries no other message. So it doesn't have any capacity to do anything else to you. It'll just fall apart and degrade in your system. It doesn't have the capacity to get into your organs and give any other message or instructions. It doesn't have any capacity to interfere with your other systems. It just really can only do one thing. And so for people who are worried about what will it do to my fertility or what will it do to my underlying health condition, really the answer is nothing. It's not going to do anything to any of those things. I do also say to people who are pregnant or considering pregnancy, remember that anytime you get any kind of illness, your body makes immunity. Any illness at all, pneumonia, the common cold, your body builds immunity. And all of those immune particles naturally get to your baby. They go through the placenta to get there. So when you do this, you're actually giving the baby COVID immunity, but in a much safer way than catching COVID if you're pregnant. COVID in pregnancy has a lot of complications, and it can cause birth defects or damage to the baby, and it can also put the mom at risk. So doing it this way instead is much safer.
It's a good answer. And I think that, you know what, maybe because I'm not a scientist, I'm just a cheerleader. I've been selling the positive side. You know, like if we all get the vaccine or enough of us get the vaccine, if enough of us wear the mask and we beat this thing down as we have been of late, we're going to get to go to ball games pretty soon. You know, I don't know what you think of my idea, but I've said that I'm going to sound the all clear horn on July 23rd. I'm thinking about moving it up to July 18th, but everybody has this sort of target in the distant future where they want to say, okay, I'm maybe with a mask, but I'm still going to be able to walk down a sidewalk without any anxiety. And I can't wait for that moment. And I think a lot of us believe that we're kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel right now. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I became fully vaccinated. I got my second dose early February through the city of Chicago. And so my 2 weeks post that second shot happened last week, and I'm fully immunized now. And I have to tell you, just mentally, psychologically, I feel safer. I feel safer, you know, I still wear my mask. I still socially distance. I'm not changing my behavior. And that's what's recommended, is that we don't change our behavior quite yet because there's still not perfect immunity. Remember, even mm-hmm. the current vaccines are 95% protective, not 100%. So we keep our behaviors for now. But even then, I feel better. So I feel better making plans to go spend an afternoon with my nieces, who are I keep in my bubble. I feel safer going into work. And going to the restroom, I just feel a little bit better. And I think that once you are vaccinated, you do feel that way. It just gives you that extra security. As we move forward, I do think that we're looking forward to a light at the end of the tunnel. That's what all of us are hoping for. We need this pandemic to be over. Our economy needs it. Our families need it. You know, our loved ones need to see us again. That's what we really need. We need to get back to normal, or perhaps even a better version of normal, hopefully. And this is the way to do it. You know, we are truly past the point, John. We are past the point where COVID will just go away. It's not going to go away. We have to make it go away. And that's the unfortunate reality. But this is our best chance. And I really think that if everyone who is eligible to get vaccinated can get vaccinated, then we have a really good shot of being back to normal, hopefully later this year or early next year.
So you're not going to sound the all clear horn with me on July 19th, huh?
I will definitely toast with you on July 19th. I think that we're going to have a lot more options available to us this summer.
Yeah.
I think that people who have been concerned about travel or didn't travel last summer will feel more comfortable if they're vaccinated this summer.
Mm-hmm.
The CDC did change, and Chicago followed suit. We changed our travel order restrictions. So if you are fully vaccinated and you're 2 weeks from your second dose, then you no longer have to quarantine if you come back, which is great. So you don't have to worry about work or something like that. You can take that trip. And I think that's going to give people a lot more options. And then once their whole family is vaccinated, I think it's going to make them feel a lot better giving their loved ones a hug.
You're terrific. Nicely done, Dr. Patel.
Oh, thanks.
Is there anything else you wanted us to cover here that we did not?
No, yeah, I snuck in that. I like my analogy. I've said it a couple of times now about the mRNA and how it's encoding a message. So I snuck that in there because I don't want to, you know, I don't do as much clinical work now that I used to, but I do go in once a week. And I went in yesterday and I gave that analogy to families. And I see African-American kids and Hispanic kids mostly, and their parents are eligible for the vaccine right now because I see medically fragile children, and they responded to that. They really do. You know, I hate to speak for the Black community because I'm not one, but I gotta tell you, I really feel like over the years I've done flu shot counseling too, and people are hesitant, but if you tell them the truth in a way they can understand it, people will look at me and be like, all right, Doc, I'll think about it. I'm glad you pointedly said it, you know, that there was a lot of structural racism against the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
They have every reason not to trust,
yeah.
But it's because they were lied to, you know. So it's important that we don't lie.
Yeah, I had a call from a very articulate and marginally angry Black man a few weeks ago, and I said, you know, I just don't understand it. I mean, I do, but, you know, it's the devil, you know. You don't know what's going to happen to you if you don't get vaccinated, if you do get the virus. And, you know, as much as you've distrusted maybe institutions in this country, really, you're going to gamble that the virus isn't going to kill you versus getting the vaccine, which you suspect? And the guy just, you know, said something like, you know, Tuskegee or something like that. I mean, he just said that's in the community. I'm not sure that it is. I think a lot of people that are opting not to take the vaccine aren't thinking specifically about what happened in the 1950s. They're just thinking, I don't trust large institutions, and that's endemic. That's what you've got to fight.
Right. I don't know. You know, in clinical life. So I'm quite petite, but still, I think in clinical life, I'm still an authority figure in the clinical room, right? So I don't think that people are going to say to me, like, well, what about Tuskegee?
Yeah.
I acknowledge that that's out there. I know that that is historical trauma. That's not the only example. You know, there's the Henrietta Lacks case.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, unfortunately, the reality is that our ethics policies in the United States for research, that was sort of the motivator for why we needed research ethics reform, the Tuskegee trials. But the predecessor to that was what happened in Nazi Germany and what they discovered through the Nuremberg trials. That was the predecessor to the worldwide sort of ethics policies. And then we made those more stringent in the 70s because when Tuskegee broke in the media, that's when we did it here for like much more specific national policies. So it's a long history, and that's also why, you know, we wouldn't get into it in your show, but that's also why pregnant women are not included in research trials. Pregnant women, children in the first round, because those populations are all considered vulnerable. Prisoners, we don't do research on people who are vulnerable anymore because of those policies. So a lot has changed because of Tuskegee, but that's not, I understand how that's not enough. You know, we didn't say, and sometimes I have found this helpful. Like yesterday when I talked to two parents, and like I said, they were African-American, and I can joke around with my family. They know me well. But I said, what's the hesitancy? And they kind of are just looking at the ground. And I said, all right, you two, how many people in the United States have been vaccinated right now? How many doses have gone out? And they said, I don't think it's that many. I said, really? How many? And they said, I don't know, probably not even a million yet, right? And I said, there are 68 million vaccinations in this country already. And they couldn't believe it. So if you do want to include anything else, I would maybe include that, that there's been 68 million doses of the COVID vaccine delivered in this country so far. 13% of the U.S. population has received a vaccine. Almost 12% of the population in Chicago is vaccinated at least once. And so for folks who are saying to themselves, I want to wait and see what happens, we've got a lot. We have 68 million people who got it. So I think, you know, if you were looking to wait to see somebody else do it, we've got a lot of people to look to.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. And 68 million people for whom there is virtually no ill effects. I may be able to find a few in 68 million, but those are very good numbers, aren't they?
That is, yeah. And I always remind people that the media has to create a headline. That's their job.
Yeah.
Sorry, no offense.
No, I understand.
I worked at ABC News for a month when I was a resident, and it was fascinating. But, you know, it's important to sell something on a headline. The media is going to find cases where one person, you know, I read a story about an older man who fell off the stairs after his COVID vaccine. He'd waited his 15 minutes out. He did fine. And then he fell off the stairs. The way to contextualize those stories is one out of 68 million.
Yeah.
It's a much different story than saying we've had 500,000 people die. We've had 500,000 people die for 26 million cases of COVID. I mean, that statistically is a lot easier to relate than one out of 68 million. So I ask people to think about that when they get afraid and they see these news stories. Think about those numbers. Because, again, you'll find these little one-off things, but they're not going to add up to a consistent pattern. The CDC is tracking everybody who is willing to tell them how they're feeling. You can sign up to tell the CDC about your symptoms afterwards. I did it. And they are following that data along to make sure that people don't have side effects that were unanticipated. And the long-term studies are starting to come out. And it's they're just as good as the originals. We have good coverage, we have good immunity, and we're not having bad side effects.
Okay, well done. Well, we will. So we've talked for 25 minutes. I'm going to play as much of this as I can this morning, and a lot of people are going to hear it. I really appreciate your time, Doctor.
Oh, thank you so much.